podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hi, everyone. So we're back for a midweek pod with the majority of games played. One more game and one more triple captaincy game for Rashford for most people. Some Brunos out there to go before we can put a bus on this week, as it has been. Nonetheless, we're here, I guess, to take a look ahead to the next double to come, with hope in our hearts that the march of double game weeks, that's not a Jesse Marsh pun, just so you know, looks to have come to an end. We can instead lose our heads at the upcoming blank just over the horizon and panic about that going forward. That's going to be fun, isn't it? Back with Lucy again. How are you doing? FPL good, football bad, I assume.
Yes, indeed. It's been one of those weekends that confirms I am firmly a football first person. So a good FPL weekend hasn't taken the edge off watching Southampton humiliate themselves yet again. Many thanks, Nathan Jones. Anyway, moving swiftly along, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me, Lucy, at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, we'll be having a shorter tactical one, continuing the butterfly effect conversation from last week and applying it to the double game week ahead. Then, with a blank game week on the horizon, we'll consider how will our moves this week see us jump into or jump out of certain pathways. Plus, we'll discuss general musings on the transfer window, managerial changes, and any other factors that might have an impact on our upcoming plans. We're recording on the evening of the 6th of February, 2 days before the United Leeds game, hotly anticipated by all of my fellow non-toe owners.
Yes, I'm sure you're all very, very excited by that one. Probably worth mentioning, I guess, where we are, a midweek sort of update. I mean, we always say midweek, but it's not really, is it? I mean, it's 10 out of 11 that have gone already. But, you know, midweek in terms of calendar, I suppose. Both happy, I guess, this week for different reasons. I think you have outscored me and got a really decent green arrow, haven't you?
Yes, indeed. I have 79 points so far, minus the 4 that I took for my triple move. And that's boosting me from 211k to 126k. A few disappointments: White, Martinelli and KDB. Obviously, KDB has been probably a massive disappointment for a lot of people. They've been masked by Kepa, another fortunate Kepa clean sheet and bonus. The first United game, which I'll speak more about in a minute, and Kane's heroics. I think my move this week was a bit more convoluted than a lot of people in my position, obviously with like a hit involved and stuff, but it did allow me to keep Kane, and that's really paid off in terms of giving me those points versus City and also kind of clearing the way for him in future weeks. I did eventually take the plunge on Rashford triple captaincy, which is the main reason my score's so good. We kind of discussed it in the middle of the week, didn't we, after our last recording.
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to get the rest that he got. Then there was Martial disappearing, which made me think that if Weghorst did need any kind of rest, then I might get some forward minutes out of Rashford. And then really, it was just to have a bit of fun. I think too much we kind of obsess about potential ceilings and data and all that kind of thing. And I just thought that Rashford triple captaincy would be fun. So that was really what tipped me over the edge. So having gone from probably leaning against it when we last recorded, I went through with it in the end. So I've still got Nonto, the rest of the Rashford triple captaincy, Bruno and Shaw to go. How was your week? I think it was good as well.
Yes, it's very good, actually. I'm shocked to find myself with a healthy green again. I'm up to 14k now from 23k I started on. I expect I will kind of even out around 15k. But yeah, I mean, I think it was diminished a bit by Rashford being, I think it's like 202%, something like that, overall effective ownership. Or at my OR, I think there was a stupid sort of shadow land I was in where his EO was like 199.9%. So I moved up 3 places per point at one point this week. The overall, you know, it's been good to just not be punished that much by the triple captaincy really going against me. In the past, you know, you've seen, if you haven't had the triple captain, and even though you've owned the player, you know, they've been in kind of north of 230%, and everything they've done has really hurt. But Rashford being, you know, just 1 or 2% over hasn't really had much of an effect on me. I did Bruno in for KDB, as I mentioned, and yeah, the 9-point plus swing has been very, very sweet. But yeah, I mean, really, the week kind of comes down to one word, Mitoma. Again, it's simply rocket fuel to get a differential double-digit return. It has been very lucky. Obviously, you've got to buy a ticket to win the lottery, but it has been simply very lucky. Ahead of this week, a worldie the week before, and 23 points from three shots, effectively. Like that header was an eight-point goal. Yes, exactly. I was wildly excited at that going in. And my cousin was looking at me like, why do you care about a Brighton player scoring goals? I only left field. I was like, oh, okay, you're a sad person. But anyway, I enjoyed it. Elsewhere, I mean, most people had the players that I had, and Lucy's mentioned them really en masse. The only thing I really had over everyone else was Estupiñán as well. He kept a clean sheet when Botman, so most people's analogue for Estupiñán is Botman. Most people have got the double Newcastle defence. Obviously, that Paqueta goal, assisted by Rice, to much hilarity for a lot of wannabe punsters on Twitter, took that clean sheet away. So another kind of 4 points that I got from him over what everyone else had, double Newcastle defence. Bruno Penn as well, above average. I heard them earlier on when I was doing shopping, and they said it was the first pen he'd scored for United since the 2020-21 season.
Yeah, so I saw that.
Very, very unfortunate, I guess, for Rashford captainers. And yeah, you know, and also stuff, you know, like Haaland, Tony, Mitro, Mahrez, KDB, all of those blanks all coming together really helped. They were like the main sort of, you know, devils this week. The only kind of real problem I had was Kepa. But I mean, I'm a changed man these days, Lucy. I'm not taking goalkeeper transfers anymore.
I know.
But he says, I mean, you know, 2 weeks' time, so I've got to get Kepa for the double or something like that. And yeah, I mean, it could have been better. I mean, Saka and Martinelli were one Connor Cody foot away from returning. So, you know, it's always fine margins, isn't it? And hashtag variance. But yeah, very, very happy with that, especially because I haven't used my triple captainship. So 74, probably gets about 80-ish, I'd imagine, with Shaw, Bruno and Rashford left. We've both got those three left, the standard three.
You can hope for a bit more than 80. That's just appearance points, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. As I always say to you, Lucy, set expectations low. That way you'll always be surprised. So okay, expect 80, 6 more points, but we'll see what happens after that. Oh, all right. Let's just quickly catch up with the mini league. It's kind of midweek, so I won't go into too much detail. Just to say that in the top 10, we've got quite a few new entries, actually. In joint 10th, Yantan Leverett, Robin Smith, he's returned to the top 10 off the back of 80 points from the Rashford triple captain. He is joined with Robert Crocker, Sack of Potatoes. We've got 10-7 this week. From 7th down to 9th, it's Durham Scouse, Matthew Winkler. From 29th all the way up to 7th, it's Miggy Smalls, Lee Ebersberger, 87 points for him, another triple captain on Rashford. From 4th down to 7th, it's captain Jack Sparrows, Andy Nichols. Unfortunately, didn't triple captain this week. Rashford captain, 59 points only for Andy. It's a bit of a rough week for him thus far. In SIP up from 12th, it's Luke Passfields with Shake and Bake, 79 points for Luke, another triple captainer. And in 4th up from 5th, Chris Hughes, Villains. It's been in the top 10 for quite a while, actually, Chris. Triple captain again on Rashford. In 4th down from 2nd, what would Jesus do? Rob Brooks, 60 points for Rob, unfortunately. In 3rd up from 8th, it's Sweet Blue Boys, Victor Sunday, another triple captainer, 88 points. And in 2nd up from 3rd, it's Strandy United, Daniel Strand, with 74 points this week. And doesn't that kind of mean, yes, it does. It still means that Mark Beakley is an awfully long way ahead, right at the top of the league. Only 66 for Mark this week, but I suspect he won't mind because he is doing very, very well indeed. It's almost 50 points difference between second and first in the mini league. And Mark finds himself in the top 25 in the world. So very well done indeed there, Mark. Right. And market forces, before we talk about the actual transfers done in the world of football, unexpectedly, Mitoma is top of the transfers in, but he's got a blank in 2 weeks, you weirdos. What are you doing? Well, he scored loads of points, so I'm guessing that's why people have brought him in. Up to 10% ownership over now, Lucy. 180,000 transfers in for Mitoma. In fact, the top five are all midfielders this week, so a midfield turnaround, maybe the pivot to 3-5-2 we discussed a little while ago is beginning to happen. Saka, bought by over 100,000 managers. Mahrez, getting to that level. We'll speak about him in a bit, that's for sure. Odegaard, another one we'll speak about. 80,000 transfers in. And Rashford, bought still by, well, that's amazing. Almost 90,000 managers have finally seen enough and decided to buy Marcus Rashford in. Those are the ones that always perplex me. I don't really understand that.
Talk about missing the bus. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very confusing indeed. But on the other side of it, João Cancelo, no longer of this parish, has been sold by 300,000 managers, which always makes it a bit surprising that people haven't really kind of, there's no defender in the top five. I guess that's just because the people have got disparate kind of targets with no obvious one in sight. Like, so, you know, me, Shah, Ake, I think, is the top bought City defender. I was expecting there to be like a big influx of people buying City, but with no clean sheet this week, I guess the robots aren't quite going there yet. Also, Almiron, 125,000 sales for him. Rodrigo, over 100,000 sales. Martinelli getting there. Definitely talk about that. And Tony rounding up the top five players sold, 82,000 sales for him. And Nketiah and Kane are the main beneficiaries of people selling Tony. Righto, let's get on to just talking about the transfer window very, very quickly. I mean, is there anything of note to FPL? I think we can probably nicely partition this off into players who may be of use and maybe players whose signing will have a consequential effect on their team's fortunes. I think, Lucy, that the main one potentially maybe Pedro Porro at Spurs, like decent data. I mean, I've got to admit that unlike everybody else on Twitter who watches the Portuguese Premier League every week, I have only on Football Manager and he was very good on Football Manager. Therefore, I like the player and FB Ref stats are pretty good.
Significant XA skew to a good XGI. So it's 0.53 this season per 90. Big XA skew though. And I was actually looking at kind of on a more qualitative level what his assists look like. And they're just a lot of classic wing back crosses. So you'd think that's good news for Harry Kane. That's the only kind of some point I've got out of it. Yep. I still don't really trust the Spurs defence. So that's a bit of a worry in terms of any investment specifically in him. But yeah, I think that should be good news for Kane. We know Conte likes to rotate his wing back, so I don't know if he himself will become an option, but
yeah, maybe. I mean, it's five million could be in with a shout, really. It has been signed at great expense. So I mean, that may be someone to bring into play, especially with Spurs' fixtures, just pretty much the rest of the season.
Very good fixtures. I think that's what's got people panicking a little bit. Those that sold Kane, he scored against City. Now they're looking at his fixtures, thinking, how do I get him back?
Yeah. If only a podcast had said exactly that last week, but hey, there you go. Elsewhere, I couldn't pick out too many, like kind of in terms of the teams in the bottom half. Onuachu, Son Emana, if Jones is sacked, do you think that they might have any sort of interest to managers?
if Jones is sacked, I'm still amazed that he's still here. 6 defeats out of 7 league games is fantastic. But yes, you would think that Onuachu at 6'7" would be a pretty good guy to have on the end of JWP's corners and set pieces, if nothing else. I think Sudaman is probably a bit more of a project player. I don't know if he'll necessarily start every game, but I wouldn't touch any of our players until Jones is sacked. And even then, I'd be pretty suspicious. I think we're probably going down. So I think we're probably more a team to target to play against than we are to buy any of our players, unfortunately.
Bah, unfortunate. And the only other sort of player I can think of who, I don't know, maybe with curiosity, but seeing Keylor Navas in the Garibaldi of Forest, I mean, it's just incredibly bizarre to see such a storied goalkeeper there. I mean, the best goalkeeper to pull on the shirt since Peter Shilton? I don't know. I've never seen Peter Shilton play. All I've seen of him is the occasional highlight and dodgy political opinions on Twitter. But hey, you know, it's really weird to see Navas playing at the City Ground. Like, no disrespect to Forest, but a very, very, it shows the crazy sort of inflated world of the Premier League. In the top six, I guess, you know, a lot of the activity was from Chelsea. Had our first look at Enzo Fernandez this weekend. I think it was Mudryk's first start and he promptly got taken off at half time. What's really interesting about both those players, Enzo Fernandez, 38 club starts in his career. Mudryk, 33 starts in his entire career. £200 million, both of them. It's amazing, isn't it, what's going on at the moment? And I guess they're going to have different, maybe have different sort of impacts, Lucy. Like Enzo probably will make the defence better and kind of have a net positive impact on the team without being an FPL asset. Whereas Mudryk, I mean, ex-Lively, hasn't got any long-term stats to back him up. So, you know, I'm guessing Analytics FC won't be looking at him until 2028. But in the short term, I mean, for game 25 onwards, when they have fixtures in that and the 28 blanks we'll discuss later, he could be one who could come into the reckoning and did look, you know, fairly good when he came on against Liverpool, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I think it was quite clear that he was struggling in the Fulham game. That was pretty clear, pretty obviously. He just didn't look like he'd looked in the Liverpool game. And I think Potter confirmed that he'd been struggling with a cold all week. So I don't think that's a fair assessment of him.
No.
The thing that makes me nervous about him is that they seem to have quite a lot of attacking midfielders and no clear number nine.
It's
just a bit of a mess. Like, he's in himself well priced. I think he's only 7.1 now, isn't he, after taking his bizarre price rise. But yeah, there are just so many different options, and obviously Sterling's just come back, who you'd think would be direct competition on that flank. So I'm a little bit nervous about, well, Chelsea in general, actually, you know, will they have kind of an established 11 or kind of consistency in their selection? Because if they don't, then even though they may not blank, they still make me a bit nervous, and because none of their players are particularly cheap.
Yeah.
I think Enzo Fernandez was one of those players that actually were one of the few players that came out well out of the Fulham game. I thought he looked really good, looked very assured, played quite sensible, simple football that was very effective. So I think he will make them better defensively, but from an attacking point of view, they just make me quite nervous.
Yeah, I think there's definitely one to wait and see. And if they can plug a gap, like in a blank, then that would probably be the reason you go for them. But I suspect they're not going to be players that you're going to be... I mean, it may well turn around, it may well knit together under Potter's magic, but I feel like it's going to be a little while before he can repair that team. I guess Badia Shile might be one to mention as well at the back. If you're not going to go with Kepa, he's 5 million Badia Shile, and I don't think he's in the Champions League squad from what I can see. Very good defender from the couple of games that I've seen him play in, and he's an absolute goat on Football Manager. And so, again, it'd be amazing. I know, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to pretend I've seen him play before he's come to the Premier League like some people do on Twitter. So, you know, you've got to be honest about these things. It's either that or people have seen him on FIFA or watched the highlights reel and therefore decided they're great. So it's more funny if you say it's Football Manager. But yeah, he was really great for me in the few seasons I owned him. You know, Fiorentina, right? He was my captain, managed 6 or 7 goals a season. Had him marking the keeper at set pieces, just absolutely. And anyway, we digress.
Are you all right there?
Yeah. So it's just about launching to a different show. Elsewhere.
It sounds more joyful than actual football. So
yeah,
why not?
Maybe, because it's all virtual and you don't see any of the nonsense surrounding it. elsewhere, Trossard impact on Martinelli, I think we'll discuss that in a bit. And Cancelo's phenomenal departure from Manchester, we've discussed already. Jesse March leaving Leeds, I don't think has much of an impact, really. I think we would probably have spoken about it a bit more if Nathan Jones had been sacked today after that incredibly strange moment with the media the other day, saying that at Luton he was amongst the best in Europe and all that. It was funny because I watched that and then I watched the interview of Liz Truss and I just saw two people who were out of their depth talking nonsense in public. I mean, if there was completely the same sort of person talking almost.
My feeling about both of them is very similar.
Wow, I'm not sure who to feel sorry for. Right, okay, let's move on then to the main discussion this week. And it's a question from Benny Blanco. Now, before we move into that, I do need to mention what he's asked me to speak about this week very quickly, which is game week 39. I'm not going to do a Scouse accent just for the sake of everyone's dignity, but he wants me to mention that tickets are on sale for game week 39, Revenge or Repeat, which is the North versus South charity football match. It will take place on Saturday, the 3rd of June in Birmingham, and features the likes of Ben Crellin, James and Search and Planet, Ben Dinnery, David Monday, etc., etc. Tickets are £5 and go direct to Street Charge United, and there's an option to donate on the site. All profits, as I mentioned, do go to charity, so it's well worth going if you can get up to Birmingham for that event. Online, it's gw39northvssouth.co.uk. Do check that out if you're interested. I won't be going for reasons that become clear in due course, but yes, it would be a very good event. I'm sure it was a really good event last year. People did give good reviews, to be fair. Right. Anyway, back to Benny's question, which was in no way given to me as a segue in asking me to mention game week 39. He asked, with Man City basically looking shit, is it worth having the triple up for their double game week? Along with Haaland, who would you say are the other best two to own? And clearly this is something which is a bit of a hot topic in the community, with a bevy of questions from people like Nick Maynard, FPL Fiddle Pie, FPL Sisyphus, and Nathan Jacobson. I mean, hopefully we'll cover all these questions. So, I mean, I think we're at different ends of the spectrum here, aren't we, in terms of City ownership? Where are you, just to remind listeners, and what are your thoughts sort of surrounding them? I guess you're kind of just ploughing into this game week, aren't you, given where you are?
Yes. Well, it's very good for the theme of the butterfly effect, isn't it, really, this whole thing? So I had already thought that City would be worth owning. In fact, I'd probably prioritise them over anyone else, thinking that what a good team they are and what a disastrous idea that's turned out to be. But anyway, I am now tripled up on them with the three players that I thought at the time of transfers were the three worth owning. So I have Ake, KDB and Haaland. And I'm just going to have to go with it. I mean, that's the way I've played it out. That's the pathway I've set. If I was picking a wildcard team for this week, would I have all three of them? I don't know if I would. But there we go. That's it. I'm all done. I don't know if it's the correct way to play it, but I can just switch off and watch the chaos now.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Like it, the divergence, just because you had Cancelo and you held him for so long, and then you know it was quite an obvious side shuffle over to Ake. You found a way to kind of remove someone else and keep De Bruyne to get Bruno in. Like it's quite, it's almost serendipitous that you just kind
of. Yeah, so I lost Mitrovic to get the money, so I didn't need to lose any other premiums.
Perfect, a nice formium for you as well. I'm just in the completely opposite boat, I suppose. So I've got Haaland. I did KDB to Bruno this week, as I mentioned. I've got no idea what to do next. I mean, I mentioned last week that I was looking at probably not taking a hit in either of the triple captaincy weeks, just because I already start 4 points down on the triple captainers. I don't know whether we'll see Haaland become, we'll talk about this in a bit, become the Avs triple captains, I suspect, but I suspect he'll still get over 200% next week. But I only want to do one transfer. And I think that my transfer is likely to be allocated towards an Arsenal player than a City one. And it seems, Lucy's like, scarcely credible that I'm considering it. But as I tweeted yesterday, I wonder if just going with Haaland alone and saving myself from Pep sweats is a good option, given what's on the table. Like, you know, they're totally out of sorts at the moment to the eye. I guess in defence of the spreadsheets, they're still top of the league in terms of expected goals and second from bottom for expected goals conceded since the restart. And they're the only team with double figures for XG from open play. So if you look at the data, you're like, you know, crap, all right, double game week, I need to load up on these guys. But the fact is, I think it's really hard if you're not in the situation. I'm sure you've kind of, since you're kind of objectively just kind of observing it from behind the glass now, I guess you can probably tell that it's pretty hard to tell exactly what to do.
As much as I'm not sure that I've got this right, I don't envy the headache that's coming out of not having it all set up, in a sense that I can just accept it for what it is rather than tormenting myself or what about who I might sell to get one in. I can completely understand why people aren't sure about midfielders. I think the Mahrez sub, the 59th minute sub yesterday, has dented the appeal for him. I mean, he's one of those players where he obviously hit the bar against Spurs, so if that had gone in and he played another minute of football, I think the narrative around him would be very different, and I think probably there would be quite a clamour to get him in. So I mean, Mahrez is one I would look at if you've got, you know, a bit more flex at a lower price point, then maybe that's the way to go. But none of them are very easy to get in, and I can understand why people aren't that enthused. The only thing I would say is that Kevin De Bruyne looked very good when he came on and set up a lot of chances. So I would be surprised if he got benched again. I think I'm feeling okay about his minutes. It's just whether his output's any good, really. And the fact is that he hasn't really provided any value since the World Cup. So it's one of those things. I've had him in since then, and he's just going to stay, and then I'll get rid of him probably.
Yeah, I mean, I had him in since the World Cup as well, and I almost kind of was thinking about this pending double, or the fact there was double coming soon. I can't remember which way around it was, whether we knew there'd be a double here or whether it was like, you know, I think there was double
it
here.
It went quite early, didn't it?
That double.
It was put in quite quickly.
And I'm sure, I mean, we both went there from the World Cup over Salah, and I think a part of the reasoning was, oh yeah, you know what? I've saved myself a transfer. But it was just kind of when the United this week rolled around, it just became quite clear that removing him for me felt the easiest thing to do. Now I kind of end up kind of looking at a lineup of potentials that I can bring in if I did elect to sell Bruno, which I'm not entirely sure that I will. But you're right, looking at the City midfielders, each of them kind of look interesting on their own merits, but also completely disinteresting if you then clothe them in the context of Pep Guardiola and Pep Roulette.
It's not just Pep Roulette, is it? It's the fact that Pep seems to now be obsessed with control and what he can kind of get out of the game from a possession perspective, not necessarily the amount of chances he can create. And I think it was pretty obvious in the Spurs game that Haaland was really struggling for any kind of decent service. And yes, part of that was because KDB wasn't playing. But in general, they were much more obsessed about shutting off Spurs' attacking routes than they were about kind of creating their own opportunities. And I think the fact that we saw Rico Lewis arguably struggling a little bit in a tucked in position reflected that, you know, Pep wants to have control of the middle of the pitch. And in a sense, that's become his priority over chance creation for one of the best attacks in the league, which I find really puzzling and also a massive concern from an FPL perspective.
It's difficult, isn't it? I was going to say that, you know, KDB, Mahrez and Grealish, I looked at the data. And it's Mahrez, KDB and Grealish. They're second to fourth on the non-penalty expected goal list behind Rashford in midfield, all on kind of four-ish. KDB keeping that company, potentially, if you're looking to buy, points to him maybe not being valued for money. Like, he's 4.7 million more expensive than Mahrez and 5.6 million more expensive than Grealish. But what are you doing with the money this year? Again,
That's the question
that I ask myself immediately. And people say, oh, he's not worth it. He's not worth it. Well, what the hell are you doing with the money? You know,
buying back Kane, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I feel sorry for the people who have done that, as we'll come on to in a bit. But yes, data also shows, unsurprisingly, Mahrez has slightly overperformed, 6 returns when he should have had 4. KDB has slightly underperformed, so 2 returns when he should have 4. I was really surprised to see Grealish there, actually. Played very well against Spurs, I thought.
He was the only
kind of bright spot, but I did think that, you know, like, so Bruno and Matoma would be above him since the restart, but it's not happened. I mean, every double game week there's one City player who goes off. I mean, it could do worse if you punched on Grealish. I mean, I saw that Luke Disable was saying that he and Mahrez were the two that you'd expect to get the majority of the games going forward. I mean, 6.8 million, he could be very good. So if you're in the situation, for example, where, you know, you've got Mitro and Andreas and you want to go 3-5-2 and you want to get Nonto in for Mitro, and then, you know, you can only really afford Grealish, he could be great to chuck in.
There are plenty of places to go from that price point if you don't have him for a very long time. Maybe keep him for 25 and move on afterwards. But
yeah. I mean, the only other thing to really mention about City in general, and particularly in the midfielders, I assume we've all got Haaland, if you're not stuck on Mahrez or KDB or both already, is this kind of shape of their fixtures going forward. So they've got the following Premier League games: Villa home, Arsenal away, Forest away, Bournemouth home, Newcastle home, and then Palace away. And interspersed with those games are other kind of priorities. So there's a Champions League game between Forest and Bournemouth. There's an FA Cup game between Bournemouth and Newcastle, and there's a Champions League game after that Palace game. And the gap is always around 3 to 4 days. Dan Legomane _FPL is very good if you want to see that kind of spacing visually. So if you're following me here, there's two kind of categories of fixtures of those, if you think about what I've just said. They're fixtures I want my Man City player to play in, and they're fixtures I'm indifferent if my players don't play, or I'd accept a blank in them, you know, a category two, we'll call them. So the ones you really want your City player to play in are Villa home, Forest away, Bournemouth away, and Palace. And the ones you don't really care if they play in are probably Arsenal away to Villa. You don't really want your City player to play in the Champions League after Forest. You kind of don't want them to show up in the FA Cup game against Bristol City, I think it is. And you probably don't want them to play in a Newcastle game before Palace. And it gets really tricky, because then you're looking at a Goldilocks sort of player, aren't you? A player who, from an FPL perspective, isn't good enough to be trusted to be in the A team, but will be wheeled out for games like Forest and Bournemouth. Bournemouth, I think, in particular, falls in the blank game week. So you really want your City players to be playing them, because you're going to have no one coming off your bench if they don't play. I was just thinking very esoterically, and you can laugh at me after this, Lucy, but there are a few names that maybe come out from this if you are really looking to take a punt here. And just for the record, I'm probably not. The first name I had, and I mentioned this him during the weekend, was Foden. If he had been on the bench this weekend, I'd have been really interested in him. I must stress, not for anything other than the fact that he can be explosive. We've all owned the guy. But it's because he fit that bill that I mentioned perfectly as being a player probably not trusted enough to play the Champions League, and ergo probably a good nominee to play 3 out of 4 of the good games, so Villa, Forest, Bournemouth and Palace. A second name that comes to mind is Gundogan, who could be playing a more advanced role if Phillips is wheeled out in these kinds of fixtures and the likes of Kevin De Bruyne are given a rest. And the other name, who's obviously not a midfielder, but also just should be mentioned perhaps, is Alvarez. So if you have space, so you say you've got Mitrovic or something you want to get rid of, or a Tony, I think he might qualify as someone who's likely to be fielded in those games as a gainful, capable backup, capable of doing points in the games you want them to play in. But they're not players that you're going to be wanting for the long term. Like, I wouldn't have minded, for example, having a Foden, just seeing what happened. But you know, the likes of Luke Disabled on Twitter are saying he thinks that Mahrez, Grealish and Akanji are likeliest to hit the 3 out of 4. It's probably just not worth going even further. Now, I don't really like the whole predicts Pep thing, and I've just indulged in it for a couple of minutes. Lucy, what are you thinking about it all? Is producing Pep, is predicting Pep simply a mug's game? And am I being a mug here?
I think predicting Pep is very difficult. And I think to a certain extent, it will depend how the results go kind of one by one as to how strong he plays it out, I think. So it's difficult to take a far out approach and think in the next 5 games, who do I want? I'm just wondering, you know, we're talking about Gundogan and Foden and all of these kind of slightly peripheral figures. Does anyone have the spare transfers to be looking at this over everyone else this game week? I feel like if you're at a position where you're considering Alvarez, you're probably looking at Nketiah, aren't you? I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, there are all these players that are fishing around. And obviously you've got 25 to think about and probably blanks to look at and stuff. I just don't know if you ever look at them with any kind of serious use of a transfer. Like, we're all a bit... it's not like the beginning of the season where we all had more transfers than we knew what to do with and could just kind of make quite luxury picks. We're at a position now where everything feels a little bit stretched, at least with the kind of, with 25 in mind. And I just think you get to the point where you think, is that actually an efficient use of my limited number of transfers? And I just don't think it is. Unless you've got like some obvious fire, of which one just kind of is a very fortunate, easy filler. I just think you're just like, no, I'd just move on.
Could you not say the same about Mahrez, who's very popular, and Grealish and De Bruyne as well? Like, if you were to say, all right, it's quite a congested period, and
it's the ceiling on those players that would draw me in. I think it's the feeling that they could, you know, you're saying that there's going to be one City player you would think that goes off. We don't know who it will be, but someone will bang. And it feels to me like it's more likely to be a Mahrez type figure than it is to be, you know, an Alcaraz or a Gundogan. That's why I would use a transfer on them, because you see that there's a potential for them to go wild. If you don't see them doing that, then I would just avoid all of them, basically.
I just wonder whether the same logic for not messing around with the peripheral figures also impacts the main figures as it stands without the kind of the key particle of the Champions League being in play. At the moment, that's on the table. Maybe all bets change again. Like, this is why I'm beginning to think more and more. Do I just absolve myself of the Pep sweats, take some Pepto-Bismol and move on? And just not.
I think someone really dull, like Akanji, might just be the best of the lot. Like, plays the vast majority of games, will be hanging about, might miss the odd game, but probably not a lot. And if you've got a problem in defence where you say you've got a Botman who's due to blank, he would be quite an easy switch if you've got a bit of cash. That kind of move probably attracts me more than the kind of peripheral attackers. But then that also speaks to who I am and how boring I am. So,
Bryn Stewart said he was debating moving to your man Ake. But I did have a look at the data for what it's worth. And the City defenders, as you'll no doubt be shocked by, haven't done anything particularly interesting this year. Akanji is the best baseline bonus of all players. So he topped the BPS for City in the 1-0 loss against Spurs. So if it would have been a 0-0, he would have probably seen a 9-pointer. And he's the sort of player who either zeros it or 90s it, I think. So as you said, probably a bit of a straightforward pick. I mean, it comes to something, isn't it, when Aymeric Laporte is an exciting looking pick after a couple of 160 points. So last year got 160 points, decent goal threat and all that. But you know, your best hope, really, if you buy in a defender, you're looking at a defender, is that your guy either plays 0 or 90 outside of double game week, if you're looking to own this player for a fair while. And around game week 25, simply, who knows? And that's kind of, again, why I'm looking at it. I mean, you mentioned kind of getting rid of a Botman, and I've got a Robertson that I could probably get rid of because Liverpool are absolutely pants. Is that worth an extra move, i.e. a hit, on top of what I might be doing elsewhere? That's the question I think a lot of people are going to be looking at.
The difficulty is that none of the current kind of popular City defenders look like they're going to get much in the way of attack. You know, we're talking about bonus points, but in terms of actual output, it's quite different to how we had Stones and Diaz and Laporte mixing it up with goals and more points, where you felt like they could go really big in double game week. So I don't know if I'd do it for a hit. I think I'd be tempted for free, yeah, definitely. But I don't. I think they've got a fairly low ceiling for the double game week, particularly as I expect them to concede against Arsenal.
Yeah. I miss that, the vision of Cancelo as he was. Like, it's just,
I know.
Didn't need to worry about this. It was just fine to own. I miss that guy. I do. Because it was just that element of certainty about it. And now you're kind of like, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, all right. I'm trying to channel as many people as I possibly can here, because you're just kind of like, yeah, I've got all three City. I'm not doing anything, so screw you all. So I'm going to have to try to channel.
Not really good for this bit, am I?
That's fine. It would be the worst agony aunt ever. I'm going to. I'll speak to Tom instead if I need some kind of sensitive advice. But yeah, I guess the City player at the expense of Bruno is probably the one that I see a lot. And I said myself last week, you gain two games if you sell Bruno for a City player, because you've got the extra game, the Arsenal game, plus you get a 25. But I am now, as I kind of said earlier, maybe thinking about just leaving Bruno there. I mean, I don't want to be that podcaster who blows through the fact that he's kind of said the opposite of what he said the week before. So I'm just going to obviously mention it, but I'm just not convinced I can trust any City asset to play those extra two games over Bruno. Bruno does have Leeds and Leicester and is in good form, whatever that's worth. So I'd be removing an in-form player in Bruno for an out-of-form player in Kevin De Bruyne, just because they've got an extra game. And that extra game is Arsenal, which I cannot call. The only caveat around Bruno, and we can see if Sabitz is up to the task like De Gea thinks he is that Casemiro has been suspended for either putting his hand round Will Hughes' neck or, if you are of a certain volition, unjustly ruled out by conspiracists due to Will Hughes unfairly thrusting his neck into Casemiro's hands. But yes, either way, I don't know. I'm a bit iffy on KD back now. And I think that there could be an option to just move Bruno on in game 25 to a player like Mudryk, who's got a 25 and 28, rather than removing a player who's doing well, has managerless leads twice in a row, and then leaky Leicester for a KDB or any of the City players who all seem to have a yeah but about them. It just doesn't seem to me like good play to removing a player who's in form, who, yes, doesn't have a double game week, but potentially could match any City player in 1 week, when you kind of think, oh, actually, it's iffy about the minutes. Like, if you were me and you weren't sat with the three City midfielders, what would you be looking at?
I think I would be worried about, a bit like I was about Bruno this week, having to bring him in for a slightly awkward hit that I wasn't very keen on. I think I would be feeling a bit awkward about what he could potentially do if I've misjudged it. Does that make sense? Like, if he does start both games and the City Arsenal game is an open game, I like you, have no idea how to read that one.
Mm.
Then I think I would be like, oh, have I left myself exposed by being too conservative? But then again, I think the thing you also have to plan in when you're looking at these moves, whether you kind of move from one player to another, and there's quite a significant difference in cost, is just that using that budget also lock you up further down the line?
That's
another thing. Yeah, if it's making life awkward for a number of weeks afterwards and you can't see any other way you would be able to release money if it wasn't that move, if you didn't kind of not make that move, if that makes sense, then I think you've also got to take that into consideration, because it's not just that move on its own, it's all of the other ramifications it has.
And it's difficult, isn't it? Because even this week, I mean, Morpheus mentioned to us when I asked questions that he had last week, you know, looking at his sort of pathway, looking at the sort of butterfly effect idea, and that he had KDB and Kane to think about, and he could have sold KDB and Andreas for Bruno and Matoma, and instead sold Kane and Andreas for Bruno and Weghorst for a 17-point adverse swing. And it's just the fact that a lot of these decisions are so close on one hand and have the immediate sort of impact. And then, as you say, you end up looking at your game with 25 and thinking, hang on a minute, if I've got De Bruyne there, and then I want to upgrade, say, my third striker and my fifth midfielder, or my fifth defender and then my fifth midfielder, to get the players in that I need to get to 10 or 11, you know, even trying to buy, you know, Tarkovsky or something like that, plus a Nonto. If I can't quite get there because I've spent my money on Kevin De Bruyne, who has kind of flattered the sieve yet again for another 3 weeks, that can be the start of beginning, as Morpheus says, to start to tear your team up to chase the week before's points, right? Like, it can be quite difficult to be kind of in that particular pathway, and it's hard to jump out of it. So trying, I suppose, to look ahead as far as possible, which is kind of what I'm doing with thinking, is it even worth having a City player? Is it even worth having De Bruyne because he'll cost a lot of money, got no way of knowing if we'll play 25, or is it even worth having a City player if I don't really know they're going to play in 25 and I'm going to need them? Like, both of those things are making me think, I just don't know if it's worth my time to remove Bruno now. I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Overall on City, I mean, I know you've got three. Do you think, from what I've said and from what we've been discussing, that you can get away with, you know, two or maybe even one? Or would you still be telling people, you know, loads of people have asked, who's the second? Is it even worth getting a second? Is it even worth getting a third? Like, where are you on that?
I think it's so team specific on that advice. You know, if you're one of these people who are too patient on Mohamed Salah and you can just do a quick Salah to KDB switch, then go for it. But I mean, if you're having to do a number of transfers to release the funds, then probably don't. I think double City is absolutely fine. I'd feel a bit exposed on one, but I can understand why people have got to that point. But I think you just have to look at your own team,
yep,
and work out what your moves will be. I think maybe looking as far as 28 might be a bit far, but looking at 25 and deciding what you will need from a money perspective to pull out your 9 to 11 players, however many you want to put out, what you'll need and kind of plan from there. And also then look at the fires that you've got in your team, if you've got any, who needs to be kind of solved and who can be left. And I would work it out that way. I don't think there are any blanket rules at this point. And I think we've got enough reason to say that triple City is by no means a necessity.
It seems ridiculous, doesn't it? I can't believe that, yes, we'd, at the start of the season, you know, you'd have been told, yeah, City have got double game week, and you're going to be sat there kind of thinking, do I even want two, let alone do I want three? You know, the impulse at all times, whenever we've played FPL, has been double game week with Man City, lump on. And it's just not felt that way this time. And I don't feel like I want to sell Bruno, for example, and we'll see what happens on Wednesday at this time. I might be interested in selling Robertson for a Man City defender, which one I simply do not know. The final thing on this bit before we go to a quick break, Hindu Monkey asked, I don't know why we could that do for Sarah time, I suppose we've got to. He asked, will City's impending relegation make Haaland more of a perma-captain? I'm not going to answer that point, but maybe it might be worth questioning, or at least projecting slightly, Lucy. With City being as they've been, do you think there's going to be any loosening of the grip of Erling Haaland over that captaincy armband anytime soon? Or do you think we're still going to be, because of the enduring EO, looking at Haaland just from a defensive point of view, if we're doing okay?
Yeah, I think we're a long way from serious interrogation of that. And if you think about it, the last time we had any kind of even creeping doubts about him, he scored a hat-trick and burnt a few people. So I think there's always that in the back of your mind, that even if City aren't in a great place, if certain game conditions open up, he can absolutely throw huge points scores down. So yeah, I think we're a long way from doubting Haaland as a perma-cap. I think we'd have to have several weeks of concern and confusion around City. And the thing is, he looks the most resistant to Pep Roulette. So
yeah, him and Edison are the two, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's unpopular, but I really love how it takes captaincy out of the game. I seem to thrive when outcomes are based on differentials rather than captaincy 50-50s. Like, they never seem to go well for me, really. I like, but it's been removed and there's like an equal playing field and it's just kind of everything really is a game. And it's more about the players you've picked rather than just getting lucky. And I really kind of like that. So long may it continue, basically. Final question. Would you triple captain now if you didn't use it this week, or would you wait So Nick of this parish hasn't triple captained. So he didn't fancy it. And he says he's still going to wait this week, I think. You know, don't think he's going to put it on Holland either. I mean, would you go now or would you kind of just walk off into the unknown and just hope that something does happen towards the end of the season?
I can understand why you would be holding off. I just would worry that it would kind of give you far too much to handle from a chip perspective and you end up losing potential opportunities on, say, a bench boost because you're so worried about making sure you get the triple captaincy out. So I think I probably would still be playing it if I'd planned to play it.
Right, right. I think it is a difficult one. I think a lot of it really does ride on how you see the Arsenal game going, whether it is an open one or if it is a one of the classic Super Sundays that we've all sat through with there at 4:30, looking forward to it, and it's a drab 0-0. Does form go out the window, or will we see quite a difficult game where neither team want to lose rather than one wanting to win? Looking at Pep playing Sufferball, I just wonder how that game will go overall. And then you're all on the Villa game and basically hoping that you don't become a victim of an Emery masterclass.
Although they did concede four at the weekend, so that's
I did indeed. I did say last week that I'd have been more worried about Haaland this week than I was about Rashford's last week, or but however you want to temporarily call it.
Yeah, current Rashford.
The current Rashford versus future Haaland. I still think I'm worried about Haaland's ability to turn a hat trick on a dime. Shouldn't be too kind of hit by recent effects by just because of that Spurs game. But you know, City have been like this for a little while. But Haaland can still score. So I don't know. I probably would just want to get the chip out of the way. I know that sounds stupid and probably isn't optimal. I think I saw something about Kane having maybe game 29 on Planet FPL. James was suggesting game 29, Spurs, and having Everton and Southampton away potentially. But that could change because Dyche and Everton might not be the best fixture anymore, and you may have Bielsa in and be playing godly football. I don't know.
If we get Bielsa in, we'll just concede even more.
But the thing is, though, he wouldn't be your under 21 team's manager because your main team is your under 21's team, right?
That's very true.
All good.
Great, brilliant.
Right. On that note of hilarity, we should probably take a break there and we'll be back to speak about Arsenal just a second.
Who got the assist?
Cool, so we're back, and it's time to turn our attentions to North London, and it's Arsenal. So, got diced this week, and we were just saying before we came back on that it's shocking, really, how quickly Dyche turned them around. But that muscular midfield absolutely just hassled, harried. Poor old Odegaard got kicked to bits. It was a pretty difficult game. And I just, from the beginning, Adam Pritchard's friend of the pod was saying, I haven't got a really good feeling about this. And I didn't really have a good feeling about it either after not very long. I mean, in fact, if Cody hadn't have cleared the Saka attempt off the line, then maybe it would have gone differently. But I don't think it's the case that we should be panicking about the Arsenal assets. But it was a very difficult game. But I don't really see it dampening interest in Arsenal. But I suspect most people got triple anyway, right?
Yeah, sure. That's what I've got. Yeah, so I think going back to the City thing. Yeah, I've got three City, but I haven't got three Arsenal yet. And even when I have three Arsenal from my one planned transfer, they're probably not the three Arsenal that I would like. So that's a bit confusing.
Yeah.
I think Martinelli has thrown a massive spanner in the works. In terms of his minutes, I think Trossard is obviously a much bigger threat than I probably expected him to be. I thought that Trossard would be used more as a kind of attacking utility man rather than someone that's just exclusively used on the left.
Yeah.
Because he is like incredibly versatile. So I thought that would be more of a cover for kind of everyone rather than just for Martinelli. And that has made me quite nervous about his minutes prospects for the double game week. And I am actually considering moving him out for Odegaard for a hit, which sounds phenomenally weird.
Yep, the crab manoeuvre. It is very bizarre. And I think if I was to move a City player in, then I think that move would happen. Basically, I think that move happens anyway for me. I know I said last week that Martinelli, you should be a bit more kind of bullish about him. I was surprised to see Trossard come on so early for Martinelli that worried me. We're now in a situation, I think, where you're looking at the Brentford game and thinking, I would not be surprised to see Trossard play that game. And that kind of spanner in the works, it's not exactly a roaring fire, but it's kindling with a match hanging over it, isn't it, really? He's in that sort of dubious category for the games going forward, if you think about 25 as well.
I think it's also not just the minutes, is it? It's the fact that even prior to the minutes threat, which is, you know, taking him down from 2 points to 1 point, is that the way that you know, we spoke about it last week, and the way that Arsenal are set up with Nketiah is very different to what they were with Jesus. And then you've got Zinchenko very tucked in. So he's being pushed very far wide. So I don't, even when he does play, if he was to start that Brentford game, I don't really have any confidence about him getting returns out of it. Whereas I feel very exposed to Odegaard, who is doing very well and is quite highly owned because he started at a pretty affordable price.
I think it really comes down to that. One, the fact that people are saying, oh yeah, you know, I've got loads of value, or would be thinking, oh, there's a value in Martinelli, blah, 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 blah. But Odegaard's still only 7.0, and that's still outrageous value for a player who will be 9 million or more next season, I think, guaranteed. I think over time, the expected minutes for Odegaard over Martinelli make the former a more sensible long-term hold. Simple as that.
Would you do it for a hit?
Yeah, I think so. So I think over time, he'd pay you back that hit. I think I was looking at doing this for the... Basically, on the World Cup wildcards, like afterwards, my regret was not being more kind of cavalier about going with Odegaard over Martinelli. And every week, there was kind of a... I wasn't kind of, you know, I'd have spoken about it more if I was seriously going to do it. But there was always that kind of feeling in my mind that, oh yeah, this could be the week where I kind of move it. As it's kind of more and more obvious that Odegaard was looking like a good player. He's still overperforming according to the data. But if you factor in that and the expected minutes and the role he plays in the team, then that kind of all kind of knits together okay. I think every week, apart from this week, the -4 would have been paid back. I'm sure that what will happen is the week that you do take a hit or move him out, that it's going to punish you. But long term, the expected minutes and the expected starts, both of those things are in Odegaard's favour. So I suspect over time, especially if you're considering the fact that you're probably going to be wanting to keep Arsenal players, if the momentum isn't stymied completely by the result this week, I think if you're going to be wanting to keep your Arsenal attackers, then I think this week would be the week that you just get Odegaard in over Martinelli and just leave it as it is. I know that maybe you'll kind of will get to 3 weeks' time and be like, oh, why didn't we keep the faith in Martinelli? That's extremely difficult to foresee at the moment. I mean, maybe, you know, Mikel's got a plan for vexing Pep, and it is using Martinelli in the free space. If they're paying a back three. But I just don't know. With the starts and minutes problem that Martinelli presents, Odegaard's an obvious option. And we're, outside of this week, playing so well, and our assets are so kindly priced, it seems like it's worth just getting that sorted out before it becomes more of a problem going forward. If I'm removing all of this extra context, this swirling maelstrom of like, oh, you shouldn't ever crab a player across because you shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that, and just look at it logically, I think it makes sense to do it. Not looking at it just as this week, but over the long term, I think that it should pay back, barring, you know, some sort of miraculous return or Trossard getting injured in training on Friday for months and suddenly you've made the removal. But it's an easy trip up otherwise, isn't it? If you were wildcarding, what would the triple up be that you go for right now? Which one would you think is the optimal one?
Probably Odegaard, Saka and Nketiah. I just think Nketiah gets so many chances because it's such a creative, productive, attacking kind of setup behind him. I think his attraction will begin to diminish kind of post-25 maybe, because it sounds like Jesus will be back kind of late Feb, early March. So you probably need to keep an eye on that, you know, in the sense that we're saying this minutes threat for Martinelli is a bit of a concern, then like that will probably creep up on Nketiah within sort of 4 or 5 weeks. So I think you need to be mindful of that. But in the meantime, he could make so much kind of profit for you from a points perspective before then. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. I think it's just being aware of that and kind of spotting issues as they might pop up. But yeah, I think those three. What do you think?
I think so. If you look at the fixtures, apart from the City game, we don't play a quote-unquote top seven team until April the 8th.
Wow.
So you've got a great run of fixtures here, lasting seven game weeks, where it's probably just a good idea to just get your affairs in order when it comes to Arsenal and just leave them there to accrue points for you over time, because I suspect that they will. The only thing that I might say, I mean, I've got Ramsdale, so and I'm not going to be removing him anytime soon.
But you love goalkeeper transfer.
I know, but I would be tempted to look at a defender potentially, just because a lot of the attacks that we're facing probably shouldn't be attacks that we'd be worried about from a tactical perspective. Is that really going to come to pass, though? I don't know. But I suspect we're most people are in a position where they've got Ben White, they've got Saka, maybe got Odegaard, but if they've got Martinelli, I think the key thing is to probably think about setting your team up for the next, up until April. You know, that's a long stretch of time that you're probably going to want to have free Arsenal for. And I think getting that right for that period, letting people who think, oh, Martinelli, yeah, you know, I got him really early, so I'm going to keep him, let them have that blind spot and take the opportunity of people who have done that. Arguably, I should have done that a few weeks ago, but I think it might be time to just do that. I know it's a bit of a gnarly thing to do.
Oh, you're doing it for free. Imagine what I'm feeling about a -4 to do it.
I know, but I might be taking a... It depends how you spin it. So I could be taking a -4 to do that if I'm saying the City player in is the free, you know?
Oh, yeah, do that and then I'll feel better.
Yeah. So Estupinian, Robertson. Do I put Estupinian away to Palace, or do I bring in a City player for Robertson and play them? I don't know.
I may be wrong. I mean, I'm probably going to be wrong. But I don't know if I see Brighton Palace or Palace Brighton, whichever way around it, being a 0-0. I think that's always a bit of a spicy game.
Yeah, no, I just don't know whether I see City. Is it really worth it? I really don't know. I mean, it might be what I do. I might make you feel better about it. It would be nice not to take a hit this week, but if I've got to, I'm only my third of the season, I think, if I do it, which again probably just shows either the Heiner influence or the fact that I've just tried to be a little bit different this year in full effect. So yeah, we shall see. Extended beyond this week then, and the last week we were saying double game weeks, God, they're so annoying, because you've got to make these immediate plans, and we've agonized about those for a good while already. Looking to the blank game 25, I suppose it's time to start planning for it a little bit. Where are you now with it? Have you looked how many players you possibly have, or, you know, after making a few moves, where you could possibly get to? I suppose you'll probably be on the way to getting 7, 8, 9. That's probably all right, isn't it?
Regardless of whether I do Martinelli to Odegaard, I was going to do Bruno to Saka. So that will give me 10 fit players for game week 25. And if Patterson makes it back to fitness, which is a possibility, I will already have an 11. So I would just have Shaw, Trippier and Rashford benched. So it is pretty straightforward for me. I think it's probably much more complex for you.
I think 8, 9 if Patterson is fit, because I'm not...
Yeah,
if I don't do KDB.
You've got 2 Brighton and 3 United, haven't you?
Yeah. If I don't do KD back. So I'd have to kind of probably take a hit this week, and then I'd be up to 10, or I'd take a hit in that week to get to 10. I think that that's fine. I'm not too worried about going any further than that. And it's definitely something that, you know, I've mentioned it a few times, that in the past I'd have been completely sort of already in planning mode for that hit and for that blank, sorry, and be thinking, oh, you know, what can I do? How can I deal with this? Oh, it's going to be a disaster if I only field, you know, 9 players. I just don't think it matters that much anymore. I think most people are either going to be on a hit to get to 11 or probably have the key men covered. I mean, all right, City will be playing Bournemouth, and I've already expressed my confusion or uncertainty surrounding those players, but most of us are going to have Arsenal players, the triple Arsenal going on. Most of us are going to have Kane, and beyond that, it's just the case of kind of filling in the gaps where they're needed. And you can probably get to where you need to be. Like, for example, if you've got 3 City or 2 City, 3 Arsenal, that's already taking you up to 5, and then you've got Kepa. As most people have got Kepa, take up to 6. Most people have got Kane, take up to 7.
I haven't been very useful in this again. I've done the same, you know, like City, that, well, who will you get? I don't know. Well, well, I've already done it. So
yeah, exactly. So you've already.
It's not even that I planned. Actually, it was just that it so happened that the players that I wanted, for example, I wanted City and Arsenal, well, they don't blank. So I mean, that's just kind of taking.
That's what I'm saying. Like, most people probably are actually in a very decent position for that week anyway. So it probably shouldn't be something that you should be worried about too much at this point, which again probably shortens the session immeasurably. We're saying don't worry about it too much. And there are a few teams with no blank in 25 or 28. We've already covered Arsenal with those. Chelsea, Everton, Palace, Bournemouth, and Forest, and Villa, actually, is an extra one, are ones that are probably worth just mentioning here as pretty potential targets going forward. And I suppose I'll come out of the woodworkers being players that would be interested in going forward. I'm guessing 24 would be a mass roll for everybody. Everyone will take a breath and just be like, you know what, I'm done for a little while. I'm just going to leave it be. Get 2 for chances ahead of the hit, ahead of a blank. I mean, any players here of interest? I note that Tarkowski is the current king of the week, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I think Everton's defence has suddenly become a lot more attractive than it was. So I think Tarkowski, only 4.2, is that correct, I think? Yeah, 4.2. So, yeah, he would be pretty high on my list. I think at the moment I'm hanging on hoping that Patterson makes it back in time. But if not, I will probably go to him.
He's
a great bench filler. So you can just make sure you use him as a player and then just discard him quite meanly. I think the other clear beneficiary of Dyche Ball is going to be Calvert-Lewin. But the problem is Calvert-Lewin is far too expensive for me to recommend him to anyone. I think he's close to 8 million. So unless you've got like a Tony fishing around by that point, which I seems unlikely, I think you'd have probably gone to Nketiah. But if you have got a Tony lying around at that point, then you could look at Calvert-Lewin. But I think, yeah, we've kind of discussed Chelsea at length, so I don't want to kind of go over that. But Chelsea defence, probably Everton defence. And I'm struggling beyond that, really. Villa defence, potentially. But I mean, they've got to not concede 4 goals to Leicester.
Yeah, yeah.
So defenders of all of those teams that seem to stick out to me more than the attackers. Obviously, Mudryk could be a potentially option, but that it's not a lot in those teams that don't blank. And that kind of again cements what we're saying about not panicking too much and bringing in loads of players. If you can't see players that you will want beyond that one game week, then I probably wouldn't be taking hits for them.
I mean, the only thing I would probably vaguely mention, I think they all come into contention and we'll speak about it more after game week 24 has ended, is Villa have got a nice kind of little run of Everton away, Palace at home, West Ham away, then Bournemouth at home. The Everton and Bournemouth games are in blanks 25 and 28. So I suspect, you know, the likes of Mings, I guess, 4.3.
Yeah, that was who I was thinking of, yeah.
Alex Moreno, I know that Dean started the last game, but I saw how that went. And up front, Watkins, obviously, I think he's 10th for XGI for strikers. Bailey in midfield, he's actually 8th best midfielder in general.
How are Bailey's minutes? I haven't really kept up with
XGI. They're not that bad, actually, incredibly. I think he and Mr. Watkins are being fielded as a de facto front two at the moment. So that's pretty exciting. As I said, he's actually 8th best midfielder for expected goal involvement since the restart. He's actually ahead of some dude called Mo Salah. That name sounds really familiar, but I don't know where I've heard it before. Yeah, and the other thing that I noted, and a friend of the pod I saw also noted on Twitter, Tom Campbell, was that my man Emi Buendia has scored 23 points over the last 3 games, and he's flourishing.
Yeah,
under
people
Emery.
Are really raving about him.
I've always loved Buendia.
How expensive is Buendia?
Always been my man. I don't think he's actually that bad this year. 5.7.
So
another one
that's interesting.
Who could come onto the table? Norwich legend Buendia. But yes, I mean it's just one of those, isn't it? Where you look at it and you can probably be quite militant about it. You know, Palace no, Bournemouth no, Chelsea probably. Especially because I don't know, in Kepa, I probably need to kind of
probably think
about a defender because that could be quite annoying. Hope Patterson does okay. Villa. probably. Forest, just going to mention a couple of names as well. Brennan Johnson, 5.6 million. Great goal this weekend. Very, very, very well taken. Okay. He's actually sit for attackers in terms of non-pen XGI since the restart. Strikers, that is. Better than the likes of Tony and Wilson. So just 5.6. Forest looking like they're finding an identity, as the melted gremlin has said, Steve Cooper. And Morgan Gibbs-White also doing very decently in this bet data. But yes, it's not the best smorgasbord, is it? And I'm really not looking forward to picking through these players. So I suppose that week we'll get Nick on or something to, do the hits investors profiles or something, so we can avoid having to discuss which Villa player are you buying? Because I think that discussion lasts all of 5 minutes. Probably Watkins, maybe Buendia. So, transfers and captains then?
Bruno to Saka, definitely. And I'm still mulling over Martinelli to Odegaard for a hit. I probably will do it.
Yep.
And then captain, obviously, Haaland.
Captain Haaland, obviously. And I think it'll be, again, probably about 210, 220, something like that. I don't know.
Captain someone hoping they don't score. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's going to be fantastic, isn't it? And yeah, I feel like Martinelli to Odegaard always happens for me. If there's another price change threatening after Wednesday, then I probably will do it. And do I get another City player? Am I going to do it? In midfield, probably not. I'm probably going to keep Bruno, I think, at this juncture, see how they do on Wednesday. But I might get the defender done just because Robertson, Liverpool are crap. Do I want to be carrying that?
But he's a bit of money as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that might be what I do. So I might take the -4 just to make you feel better, Lucy.
Thanks. What a friend.
You know what I'm like. Right. Well, I think that's your lot. We'll be back next week for another mid-double game week pod.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FBL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynett with 2 T's. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
Yes, please. Helps us get out there immeasurably. Enjoy the rest of double game week, although not too much Rashford triple captainers. And in the meantime, thanks for listening. Hope this assists you. Farewell.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.